Chapter 84. They stay here. We shall learn soon enough. Nieberg, look at their faces now. Count Metternich stares at Prince Talleyrand, no muscle moving. The King of Prussia blinks bewilderedly upon Lord Wellington. Marie-Louise, concerned?
Yes, so it seems.
They are thunderstruck. See, though the music beats, the ladies of the tableau leave their place, and mingle with the rest, and quite forget that they are in masquerade. The sovereigns show by far the gravest mien. I wonder, now, if it has aught to do with me or mine. Disasters mostly have to do with me. Countess of Brignall, those rude diplomats from England there, at your imperial father's consternation, and Russia's, and the King of Prussia's gloom, shake shoulders with hid laughter. That they call the English sense of humor, I infer, to see a jest in other people's troubles. Marie-Louise, hiding her presages, they ever take things thus phlegmatically. The safe sea minimizes continental scare in their regard. I wish it did in mine. But Wellington laughs not, as I discern. Nieberg, perhaps, though fun for the other English here, it means new work for him. Ah, notice now the music makes no more pretense to play. Sovereigns and ministers have moved apart, and talk, and leave the ladies quite aloof, even the grand duchesses and empress. All such mighty cogitations trance their minds. Marie-Louise,
with more anxiety,
poor ladies, yea, they draw into the rear, and whisper ominous words among themselves. Count Nieberg, I must ask you now, go glean what evil lowers. I am riddled through with strange surmises and more strange alarms.
The Countess of Montesquieu enters.
Ah, we shall learn it now. Well, what, madam? Countess of Montesquieu,
breathlessly,
your majesty, the Emperor Napoleon has vanished from Elba. Whither flown, and how, and why, nobody says or knows. Marie-Louise,
sinking into a chair,
my divination penciled on my brain something not unlike that. The rigid mean that mastered Wellington suggested it. Complicity will be ascribed to me, unwitting though I stand.
A pause.
He'll not succeed. And my fair plans for Parma will be marred, and my son's future fouled. I must go hence, and instantly declare to Metternich, that I know not of this, and in his hands plus me unquestioningly, with dumb assent to serve the Allies. Methinks, that I was born under an evil-colored star, whose ray darts death at joys. Take me away, Count.
You, to the ladies,
can stay and see the end.
Exeunt Marie-Louise and Nieberg. Mesdames de Montesquieu, and de Brignall, go to the grill and watch and listen.
Voice of Alexander,
below,
I told you, Prince, that it would never last. Voice of Talleyrand, well, sire, you should have sent him to the Azores, or the Antilles, or best, St. Helena. Voice of the King of Prussia, instead, we send him, but 2 days from France, give him an island as his own domain, a military guard of large resource, and millions for his purse. Another voice, the immediate cause must be a negligence in watching him. The British Colonel Campbell should have seen that apertures for flight were wired, and barred to such a cunning bird. Another voice, by all report he took the course direct to Naples Bay. Voices
of new arrivals,
he has made his way to France, so all tongues tell, and landed there, at Cannes.
Excitement.
Countess of Brignall, do now, but note how cordial intercourse resolves itself to sparks of sharp debate. The lesser guests are fain to steal unnoticed from a scene wherein they feel themselves as surplusage beside the official minds. I catch a sign the King of Prussia makes the English Duke. They leave the room together. Countess of Montesquieu,
yes,
with Wayne's, and all are going. Prince Talleyrand, the Emperor Alexander,
Metternich,
the Emperor Francis. So much for the Congress. Only a few blank nobodies remain, and they seem terror-stricken. Blackly end such fair festivities. The red god war stalks Europe's plains anew.
The curtain of the grill is dropped. Mesdames de Montesquieu and de Brignall leave the gallery.
The light is extinguished there and the scene disappears. Scene 3, La Mure, near Grenoble, a lonely road between a lake and some hills, 2 or 3 miles outside the village of La Mure, is discovered. A battalion of the 5th French Royalist Regiment of the line under Commandant Lessard is drawn up in the middle of the road with a company of sappers and miners, comprising altogether about 800 men. Enter to them from the south a small detachment of lancers with an aide-de-camp at their head. They ride up to within speaking distance.
Lessard, they are from Bonaparte. Present your arms.
Aide, calling, we'd parley on Napoleon's behalf, and fain would ask you join him.
Lessard, I'll parole with rebel bands the government forbids. Come 5 steps further and we fire.
Aide, to France, and to posterity through finest time, must you then answer for so foul a blow against the common weal?
Napoleon's aide-de-camp and the lancers turn about, and ride back out of sight. The royalist troops wait. Presently there reappears from the same direction a small column of soldiery, representing the whole of Napoleon's little army shipped from Elba. It is divided into an advance guard under Colonel Mallet, and 2 bodies behind, a troop of Polish lancers under Colonel Germanowski on the right side of the road, and some officers without troops on the left, under Major Pocconi. Napoleon rides in the midst of the advance guard, in the old familiar Edingot cries, cocked hat, and tricolor cockade, his well-known profile keen against the hills. He is attended by Generals Bertrand, Drouet, and Cambron. When they get within gunshot of the Royalists, the men are halted. Napoleon dismounts and steps forward.
Napoleon, direct the men, to lodge their weapons underneath the arm, points downward. I shall not require them here.
Colonel Mallet, sire, is it not a needless jeopardy to meet them thus?
The sentiments of these we do not know, and the first trigger press may end you.
Napoleon, I have thought it out, my friend, and value not my life as in itself, but as to France, severed from whose embrace, I am dead already.
He repeats the order, which is carried out. There is a breathless silence, and people from the village gather round with tragic expectations. Napoleon walks on alone towards the 5th Battalion, throwing open his greatcoat and revealing his uniform, and the ribbon of the Legion of Honor. Raising his hand to his hat he salutes.
Lessard, present arms.
The firelocks of the Royalist Battalion are leveled at Napoleon.
Napoleon, still advancing, men of the 5th, see here I am. Old friends, do you not know me? If there be one among you who would slay his chief of proud past years, let him come on, and do it now.
A pause.
Lessard, to his next officer, they are death white at his words. They'll fire not on this man. And I am helpless.
Soldiers, suddenly, why yes. We know you, father.
Glad to see ye. The emperor forever.
Ha! Huzzah!
They throw their arms upon the ground, and, rushing forward, sink down and seize Napoleon's knees and kiss his hands. Those who cannot get near him wave their shakos and acclaim him passionately. Bertrand, Drouet, and Cambron come up.
Napoleon, privately, all is accomplished, Bertrand. 10 days more, and we are snug within the Tuileries.
The soldiers tear out their white cockades and trample on them, and disinter from the bottom of their knapsacks tricolors, which they set up. Napoleon's own men now arrive, and fraternize with and embrace the soldiers of the 5th. When the emotion has subsided, Napoleon forms the whole body into a square and addresses them.
Soldiers, I came with these few faithful ones, to save you from the Bourbons, treasons, tricks, ancient abuses, feudal tyranny from which I once of old delivered you.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.